Podcasting 2.0 for May 17th, 2024, episode 180, Serial Churn. Hello, everybody. It's Friday once again. Time for the official, the one and only board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. Everybody, everything, it all gets discussed right here. That's right. We don't talk behind your back. We are the only boardroom that doesn't have a booth at a podcast conference. You want to know what's happening in podcasting? It's all here. I'm Adam Curry in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who brings his programmatic span to your vast. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. Dave Jones.
So if I have to tell you to rip it twice, does that mean I ripped you a new one?
You
ripped...
Ding, ding. We're in quite the mood, aren't we today, Dave?
Oh, we are, yes.
Yeah, we're in a good mood. So we started off before we started the show, which, by the way, we're live and lit every single Friday afternoon. You can listen to us live in a modern podcast app, podcastapps.com. I got something to say. Because Dave was late. He was late. And before we even start that, I want to say... there will be no board meeting next week. I will not be in town. I will not be available to record. I'm so sorry. Yes, I'm going to Nashville.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
For the K-Love Awards.
Oh, yo, this is the God Music.
Yes,
extravaganza.
The
right.
Big God Music extravaganza. Extravaganza. All right. So why were you late? What's your rant, brother? What's going on? What's happening? How can I help?
I've spoken many times in the past about the... I'm sorry. I'm trying to put down my salami and cheese.
I wondered what I smelled, but now I know. It's salami and cheese.
It's my breath. Yeah. So I've spoken many times in the past about my hatred of USB-C docking stations.
Yes, and I think I've said, don't be a hater, but you have not taken this advice clearly.
Okay, so I want to, let me re-up the hatred.
You want to re-up the hatred now?
Yes.
Okay.
So after a couple of hours of troubleshooting a USB-C dock, we come up with this lovely support bulletin from Lenovo.
Oh, and this was at the day job. This was a real support ticket I'm taking.
Yeah, oh yeah. And these things are just a nightmare. Everybody you talk to, these things have a limited lifespan. They're crap. Ever since they went from, you know, old docking stations, they had a custom connector.
A big one, a really big connector.
It was like 70 pins, like
scuzzy connectors.
Scuzzy. Yeah. Frozen garden hose type.
Right.
Scuzzy connector.
All proprietary. Everybody had their own dealio. Yeah.
But you know what? They worked every single time.
They worked. Yeah.
Every time. USB-C. I have a document that is like 20 pages that shows how all of the routing internally happens, because what you see on the end of like when you plug in a USB-C docking station, what you see on the end is just a USB-C connector.
Right.
But there is so much going on inside of that thing.
Can I ask a question? Is this not essentially like a USB dongle that has expansion ports? Isn't that kind of what this is?
This is the problem. USB-C docking stations, modern USB-C docking stations, are Thunderbolt.
Oh,
they are either Thunderbolt 3 or Thunderbolt 4.
Oh,
system boards. So these docking stations have firmware in them. They run software. They are almost like a small computer unto themselves.
Oh, it's like my LED lights. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It also buzzes on your microphone.
Yeah, right. So there are things that can happen with these where where nothing you do on the computer itself actually will fix it. You have to reboot the dock. Because the dock is acting independently.
It's acting up, yeah.
Yes. So but what you see at the end of is a USB-C cord that plugs into your computer. But what's happening on the inside of that thing is you're routing USB-A, USB 1, 2, and 3.
Right. HDMI.
HDMI, DisplayPort, potentially, if it's supported, VGA.
And S-Video. S-Video. Tell me it's got RGB S-Video.
Audio.
Network.
And Thunderbolt.
Network. And Ethernet. Network. Ethernet, yeah.
Ethernet and Thunderbolt.
Hmm.
Potentially 3 and 4 Thunderbolt.
And can you plug in your Nintendo data glove?
Yeah, and the little robot guy, you know, the little Nintendo robot guy with the big eyes. So you're routing all of this stuff over you know, these small connections, a number of pins.
Yeah,
the amount of things that can go wrong with this are limitless. They usually always show up with video first. So in a financial services environment, 3 monitors is like standard, minimum these
standard,
days.
Standard, yeah. Yeah, standard.
Minimum. Sometimes 4, sometimes 5. You see big like trading houses and stuff, they may have 10.
Yeah.
On a single machine. So the ability to do more than 2 monitors, 3-4 monitors is just standard. USB-C based docking stations, Thunderbolt docking stations struggle with this so bad.
Yeah.
They just can't handle it. Because you have different flavors of DisplayPort over USB-C. You have passive and active, and all of these things. And depending on which configurations, if you plug it in, if you have 1 HDMI, 1 DisplayPort, and 1 USB-C to DisplayPort, that may trigger them to one of them to go into a different mode. It's mind-boggling. But then I run across this wonderful support document after troubleshooting for a couple of hours. Lenovo, critical Intel Thunderbolt software and firmware updates. Symptom, systems may experience any of the following symptoms. You ready?
Yes.
USB-C port not working. Intel Thunderbolt controller not visible in the OS device manager. USB-C or Thunderbolt docking stations not visible or having connectivity problems. HDMI output not available. System battery not charging with USB-C power adapter connected to the USB-C port. Intel Thunderbolt pop-up error message. Intel Thunderbolt safe mode error message. BIOS Thunderbolt communication error or hang during post. Here's the kicker.
There's more?
These symptoms may occur after 6 to 12 months of usage.
What? What? Are there moving parts that wear, or what's happening?
Hey, you tell me. What does that even mean?
That's crazy. That sounds like, well, you know, that monitor may have a driver update or something else may change. It sounds like they're building in some wiggle room for things changing external to the device.
What could possibly be inside of these things that would begin to trigger problems 12 months in the future?
I know that. Venezuelan immigrants.
Each Thunderbolt dock has a Venezuelan inside of it.
I guess. Wow. Okay. I feel your pain, brother. I feel your pain.
Yeah. Now multiply this across hundreds of users, and this, you know.
So it's primarily the multi-monitor users that are experiencing issues.
Yeah. What happens is they seem to work fine, and this is like going to industry conferences and this kind of thing. This has turned into the USB-C dock podcast. But going to like industry conferences and talking to my peers, this is universal. It's not anything with one specific vendor. Like evidently the Dell USB, the Thunderbolt docks are so bad that like you just go ahead and budget 12 to 18 months and they're going to die. Like you just build that in. They swap them out like crazy. So this is my, Wow. Can we please go back to the old days of just standard dock connectors?
You know that's not going to happen. And the fact that it's Thunderbolt is kind of trippy, isn't that? I thought that was an Apple-only thing, but I guess it's a standard.
And these docks, the old-school docks used to cost $200.
Oh.
These, these Thunderbolt 4 docks, they're $400. Wow. And a three foot Thunderbolt 4 cable is $75.
Wow. What a jip.
It's outrageous. And so tell me we're gonna have driving cars. We can't even get three monitors to work over USB-C.
Self-driving cars, yes. Well,
yeah, self-driving cars.
Well, that brings me to your overview of the most recent presentation by Google at their I/O event to explain the future of the company.
AI.
I found the AI really useful.
AI, generative AI. AI.
And that's the power of generative AI.
AI.
There it is. Now you know what they're up to.
I like the one guy. Generative AI. Is that an Indian or a pretendian?
No, that's... Oh, yes. I heard that part of the podcast as well. The pretendian. No. No, that's a real Indian. Yeah. But before that, I need my rantlet.
All right. Go.
This morning at 8 o'clock, my phone goes. Like, literally 7:59. I'm about to take the dog out for a walk. I'm like, and I see it's a 512 number, so it's an Austin number. I'm like, no, you're too early. So I just send it to voicemail. Come back in. Actually, I have a call scheduled at 9. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, let me check this voicemail. Voicemail from Deputy Sheriff Jack Barnes, Travis County, concerning an urgent legal matter. Call me back at this number, and I'll be waiting for your call.
Oh, no.
I'm like, okay. I call back. I get him on the phone. You know, it's clearly the sheriff's office just from the sound of it. And
so it's legit.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at a 512 number. Then I said, hold on, I'm going to put you on with my lieutenant. So Lieutenant McNeil comes on. Badge number 03156. There are two... there's a warrant out for my arrest because... I have failed to appear as a grand jury expert witness, and I apparently signed on April 15th. I signed the subpoena that came to my door, and he has the numbers and everything. And he says, you know, basically you can be arrested.
What?
Yeah, because, you know, there's a warrant out because you have ignored the subpoena and you've ignored you're in contempt of court. And I'm like, and then all of a sudden, you know, we get disconnected. So he calls back and then he continues. And then he says, now, so there's two ways you can handle this. There's the criminal procedure or the civil procedure. I mean, this goes on. I'm like, holy crap. And my heart is pounding. I'm like, it's what? Like
there's an easy way and a hard way we can do this is what he's telling
yes, you. Yes, exactly. And it's like, I'm like, well, I should probably call my lawyer. No, we have a maintain contact order. Which means we have to stay in contact with you as you drive down to the sheriff's office. Whoa. So we can process this. And I'm like, and so this is going on now 10 minutes. I'm like, holy moly, what? I'm racking my brain. I can't figure this out. And then he says, so what we need you to do is you need to go to this kiosk and then you're going to pay a bond and then you'll have a barcode and then you bring that. I say, oh, hold on a second. You got me. You got me. I said, I'm calling my lawyer. No, you can't have. Oh, okay. It was a scam. 15 minutes. They had police radio in the background. I mean, it was sophisticated. They had my address, my name, of course, my phone number. It was sophisticated.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not one to fall for something. But along the way, there are a couple of things that started to bother me a little bit, but I was just so blown. I mean, this actually, I've been asked to be a possible character witness for a friend in Dallas next week with like some bull crap thing. But, you know, so I've had special agent show up at my door from the inspector general's office. And I said, I'm not talking to you. Go away. You know, because, you know, they're just harassing. So that was kind of the back of my mind. I'm like, holy crap, what are they doing to me? Is this a deep state? Finally, they got me.
They found me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, wait, I have that somewhere. Where is that thing?
Like, so were they using generated voices or something? Or
No. It was actual. Let me see. Is this it?
Mr. Adam Curry.
Open up the door, Mr. Curry. Now.
There you go.
I mean, that was for real. Legit. Like that. So these were people that had like a believable Texas accent.
They had, you know, the police radio in the background. It was totally, I was in it. I was like, oh man, I'm screwed. Something's up.
You just knew that you were going to have to go buy $5,000 of iTunes gift cards.
I'm like, you have to go. I'm like, kiosk. Wait a minute. What is this kiosk business? No. I'm calling my lawyer. No, you can't. You have to, what was it? Yeah. You must comply. I'm like, oh yeah, comply this. No, but hey, 12 to 15 minutes. They really had me, Dave. They really, really had me.
That's kind of scary.
It's social engineering, you know. It was well done. They had a good script and everything.
This is so I was in on a security, like a webinar not too long ago.
A webinar?
Yes, it was great. And this guy's good. He's a local guy. Gary Warner's his name, from UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham. And he's really good. He's been in the cyber security game forever. And but before it was even a thing, really. And he made a statement in this last, like the annual update from last, I think it was in December. And he said, if you know in your family or out or friends with or neighbors with anybody who's older.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who's, let's just say, baby boomer.
Careful.
I've identified generation. He said baby boomer or older. Uh-huh. You're not baby. You're Gen X.
There's a big disagreement about this. I believe I am Gen X, 1964, September. There are some places that say you're a boomer. Because she's definitely boomer because she's 1962. And I just remind her, I was the face of Generation X.
You were. Yeah, I'm definitely Gen X. I think you're Gen X.
Well, I know I'm Gen X, but there's disagreement from some borderline boomers.
Are they on the council? Are they on the Gen X boomer council?
My wife, apparently, yes.
You're one of us. Don't try to deny it.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, if you know anybody who's baby boomer or older, tell them about these things because they are a target right now. Billions of dollars is being milked from.
Older people. I've actually helped some people here who were being billed. Oh yeah, no, took them to the bank and everything. Like stop this payment. Stop this. Stop that. You know, sad. And we got a special thing coming up in church for these people.
Oh, that's good.
The main thing is, text messages, that's the big, catch-alls. Oh, I got a text message, so that must be official. And what these guys got me with was the 512 area code. That was sophisticated.
And the local accent and all that stuff.
And the police radio in the background. That was good. And it was loud, you know, like there was a dispatcher. That was quite good.
This says, in 2023, total losses reported by IC3 to those over the age of 60 topped $3.4 billion.
Dude, it's a bigger industry than podcasting. It is.
We're
in the wrong business.
That's where all the podcast money went. It went to these guys.
We're in the wrong business.
Yeah. We should do how you, it's and it fits too, because it's value for value.
Oh, my goodness.
You give me money and you don't go to jail. We both get value out of that.
You know, just kind of on that tip of where everything's going, the streamers are there. It's all going down. It's happening in real time right before our eyes. So first of all, the recognition that no one is watching television anymore. I mean, of course, there's still people watching. Obviously, some shows still have millions of people watching, but not 20 million.
Quick, Adam. Name me one television show that's on broadcast television right now.
Now, the only thing I would guess is NCSI, but I don't even know which one. Special Victims Unit. I can't name anything.
I've asked six people in the last week that question. Not one of them could name one.
You know, this is when they say, how do you go bankrupt? Really slow, and then it goes fast all of a sudden. This, I think we're in the going fast acceleration phase. And what's happening now is the streaming companies who, of course, now we got to show profitability. And it's not to say that Netflix isn't successful. Netflix, arguably the earliest, the quickest to the game. And they've pulled back on a lot of the money they were putting into production. And of course, everyone's now starting with ads. Everybody has an ad. So we've taken advertising-based television off of cable primarily. And remember, cable was brilliant because you got paid per household. So if you just had a channel on cable, this is what Al Gore, he bought and sold, it became Al Jazeera, I think. I don't know.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you are in a million households, you're getting $1 million a month. That's just because it's a minimum $1. ESPN, which is still, I think, a required you're required to take ESPN by most cable companies. They get $7 per subscriber per month off of that cable bill goes to ESPN or / Disney. So now we unbundled everything, basically pulled it all apart. We got Disney over here, and we got Paramount over here, and we've got Hulu, which was kind of a sad bundling of television shows, and now. Well, I'm going to go to the ditzes at Yahoo Finance. Two clips. Yay. The first one shows you kind of the lay of the land. The second one, I think, is actually the meat of what's happening here.
Rebundling. An alliance has emerged in the intensifying streaming wars. Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery are teaming up to release a brand new streaming bundle later this year. So what does this new partnership mean for the streaming landscape moving forward? We're looking at how to navigate the big picture with the Yahoo Finance playbook. And we're joined by Ken Leon, Research Director of Equity Research at CFRA, and Jamie Lumley, Third Bridge sector analyst. Jamie, I'm going to start with you. You're here with us in studio.
I really wanted to slap her, but we'll let her go.
This is intense, man. Jeez.
I just keep getting like so amused by this discussion because it's like this new innovation bundling,
right?
Which is cable.
No, it's not cable because these bundles don't get paid per channel. That's not true, finance lady.
Cable did, right? But do you think that this is the way forward, and is this going to benefit the various parties who are doing it?
It definitely is interesting development, and we're seeing this increasingly in this space. One thing we've been hearing at Third Bridge from the experts we speak with is just the fact that what streamers are looking for are ways to not only drive growth, but also manage churn. It's a huge issue. Serial churners are one of the things which all these platforms have to deal with, is people either at the end of their show, they decide just to switch to a new platform. At the end of a sports season, they decide to just cut off that service. By having these bundles, it's a new way that they can both drive longer-term customer value, but also showcasing different types of content. You know, with the matchup of a Hulu and a Max and a Disney Plus, it really covers all the bases of genres and can appeal to a lot of different audiences.
Okay, so a lot of blah-de blah-de blah, but the whole point is they're churning. Serial churn, which is a great show title, actually. Serial churn, because people are doing exactly what we've heard everybody say. Yeah, I just want to see this one show, and then I'll cancel the minute I sign up, and I pay my, what is it now? Is it $17, $18, which is still pretty high. but I'll pay that. And then if there's something else going on, I'll catch it later. Now, the second guy kind of lays out the real bones of this.
I think when you look at the bigger picture, it's really a lot of these media companies trying to figure out how can they be profitable. So the first step was reducing programming and content spending. The second was de-risking because they have no control really of the customer. Unlike wireless or even cable TV decades ago, you had 1 or 2 year contracts. So churn is very high. They will never release that. And also, if you look at where entertainment has moved to events, to live sports. So none of these managements will say that they can get to a 20% operating margin on this business, nor a 50% EBITDA margin like wireless. So it's not a great business. And I think they're all de-risking. They're reducing capital, and they're going to say, gee, Netflix is a winner. Large technology companies can play here. What can we do for two things? One, try to grow subscribers, and two, try to get advertising revenue.
There it is. So basically, we're going to see consolidation. Paramount is now being ripped apart. All the parts are going to be the parts are worth more than the whole and the sum of the parts. Individually, it's going to be ripped apart. It's going to be, typical leverage buyout. So, strip all the assets, get rid of all the people. Lots of firings ahead, and there will be some offerings, but it's all going advertiser based. The big draw of Netflix and all these other streamers was, hey, man, I just pay a fee and I don't have to deal with ads. It's all going to come back. It's all going to get crappier. And yes, you will still have some big hit shows, just like in the music business. We still have a Taylor Swift and a Beyonce, and even there, I'm starting to see some actual revenue issues. Mm-hmm. For podcasting, value for value is truly the only way. Build up your community. I don't care if it's 100 people. That it is the only way forward at this point. And the advertising, and certainly in podcasting, no, it's just no, it's not working anymore, except for per inquiry. I still like codes. If you get paid on a code Bongino, I still think that works with what we call a host red ad. I think that still works, and you're nothing like a little boost.
Which one?
That's a low baller. That's a 777 from Salty Crayon. Yeah.
Thank you, Salty Crayon.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to have to turn that one off if you guys are abusing it. You should only be using that just to accentuate something with the harp. When you light up the harp.
I see Eric PP fixing bugs. So
yes.
I didn't fully understand what Spotify did with that the price floor change on
the bundle. You mean they're bundling?
No, they said their Spotify audience network span. That they've lowered the price.
Worst
floor.
Name ever.
Okay, yeah, it was horrible.
Span. Yeah. Really? Did you just say spam? What? We're just calling it spam from now on. We're just calling it spam.
The marketing jargon here was virtually impenetrable, but I think I figured it out. They said that when it's all got to do with programmatic delivery, stitching in the ad as you listen, and evidently they're calling it a waterfall.
Where you're at the bottom drowning.
it's a waterfall where your foot's in the drain. Yeah. And so they have, there's like three layers to this thing. There's direct sale or direct buy. And then there's Spotify audience network. And then there's like programmatic delivery. I guess that's like, we don't have anything else. Let's deliver a Viagra ad or something, bottom of the barrel, yes, 30 cents.
Yeah.
But the span, they said they lowered the price floor on the span part. And I think what that means is that the Spotify audience network will take will get more of the inventory delivery.
Yeah, the remnant, the low level fruit. It's not even fruit. It's dried up. It's like raisins.
It'll win the bid more often. Right. So things are pulling from span more, and like this, we already have seen that the subscription stuff. That's the only way to make these things work. The advertising alone can't sustain it. Everywhere you look, it's always, which, you know, I think people got
boob.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric Peepee.
Not going to last long, kids. Use it sparingly.
Get them while they last. I think we got our, We ended up with a wrong idea of the way that the monetization of all of this stuff works because you have Facebook and Google, which dominated advertising, and obviously makes billions and billions of dollars. And so I think it left us with this idea that advertising is always and everywhere going to be a winning strategy for revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's only a winning strategy if you are essentially a monopoly in a business, which Google is and Facebook is. I mean, Facebook is a virtual, I hate the term virtual monopoly.
Mm, yes.
But I think you understand my meaning.
Of course.
Within the social media world, Facebook is as close to a monopoly as you're going to get. I mean, Twitter's that's a joke. I mean, it's an also ran, and Facebook is the 900-pound gorilla. Nobody even comes close to second place.
And that's because they're not really in brand advertising. They're like the classifieds, you know. It's like, and that's starting to wane as well. I mean, you want some spam, you want some bots, go put an ad on Facebook. I mean, that's,
but podcasting is the anti-monopoly.
I like that. I'm ISOing that.
You know what I mean? The podcasting is by definition anti-monopoly because it is so diverse. Nobody will ever dominate in this arena. Even people who have large audiences, there's still only one show in a person's podcast app. Yep. That person also has, if a person listens, doesn't matter if a person listens to 3 hours of Joe Rogan a week, that person also has 17 other subscriptions.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely the anti-monopoly. And so there's no way that advertising is going to ever become the main player that supports podcasting. It's just not. I mean, in order to provide everybody with like livelihoods, it's not happening.
Well, in addition to that, we went horribly wrong many, many years ago in podcasting. And I would like to try and explain. And this has come up for me recently as I am realizing that the pitch podcasting is making is pretty much centered around a couple things right now. Monetization, growing your show, video. That's pretty much the pitch. And when we first started, so when we first started podcasting, what was I don't use this word easily. What was so awesome was you were hearing people who weren't professional broadcasters. They didn't have a professional delivery. Unfortunately, it was very hard to even get a semi-professional sound. So somewhere along the line, it was 10 years ago. I tried to get the Castmaster Pro out there. I'm like, we need to get people back into just sitting down, recording, and then putting that out. And because we didn't have real-time processing, basically we had musician gear, you know, that we had repurposed. Broadcast gear was out of control, expensive. The amount of rigs I have built over the years with DBX compressor limiters, with literal racks, with what I have, I have processing units, 19-inch boards, everything. Because that was just too much for people to figure out, and the sound quality was so poor without some of the basics, we resulted to this format where you record, then you, or preferably you hire someone who is then going to process it, chop out all the ums and the ahs and tighten up spaces. And now you fill Spectre with a wall of sound. And it's my big podcast voice. And we became, something that is just boring, like radio, we've kind of recreated that. And we never really got that. In fact, Dave Weiner, I think he said this, might have been an interview he did. I'm thinking James Cridlin had this somewhere. Weiner was concerned, and it's a valid concern. He was concerned about me being kind of the face of podcasting because, and I think there's something to this, because people would hear me and think, well, I can never be that professional. Whereas the idea that you can just be someone who just records a podcast about the topic that's your passion, about your community of interest, about your local community, about your school, your church, your soccer club, whatever it is, and that would be, oh, that's not a good podcast. And I think we actually, that happened to us. We got to that point where, oh, well, that's not a good podcast. And now it's even taken it one step further. Well, if you don't have headphones on with mics and it doesn't say Rode on the boom and you don't have video, you're not a podcast.
Yeah.
And along with that comes a need, because we have serial churn. We have serial churn in the hosting business. And as I was listening, I've only listened to a little bit of Pod News Weekly Review, but as I was listening about, the never-ending conversation of first-party data, listen time, statistics, etc., James and Sam both made valid points. James says, look, stats are very important because that's kind of the only thing that a new podcaster has that validates what they're doing. It's, okay, I see a download from Lithuania. And I'm sure it's Dovidas's mom who's sitting there, I'm going to download some more. all these weird kind of stats. Interestingly, now that James has seen that the Buzzsprout, what is that thing called?
Fan mail.
That if he incorporates that into a show, all of Jacksonville, Florida will send him fan mail, which is, of course, where Buzzsprout is located.
That's right.
But the idea that comments would be one way, totally valid. And then Sam pipes in, but it was kind of poo-pooed a little bit. But what I have seen, when you put someone on value for value and they see Satoshi's coming in, one person listening is exciting because every minute you see five sats go by. I just had this experience. A dear old friend of mine, Vic Pepe, known from the music business. He's a big IT guy now. He started a podcast called 10,000 Miles. And even though he knows me and even though I was number two interview on his podcast, it was all YouTube. It's all YouTube. And, he's got the camera all set up and everything. He's done like 9 episodes. And he says, you got any feedback? I said, yeah, turd. You're talking to the pod father here. And so I send him to Blueberry to vid to pod. And he gets it set up, a couple of hiccups and stuff, but Mike Newman actually very helpful. So he gets it set up. He puts it out there. It's value for value. And of course I boost him, obviously. He's all jacked. Mm-hmm. He's calling me like, I got a boost. It's from Yoda. But then he sees other people just listening. He got a boost. He's like, how does this happen? It's amazing. So he is so excited and it's not about the amount of money. It's just the validation, which he's not getting from YouTube. On YouTube, he's got like 100 views, 200 views. My episode was more. I tweeted it a link or whatever. But in general, it's just it's a handful of views. And so when he sees that coming in, he's excited. And I feel that podcast hosting companies, now, of course, some notable exceptions who are all in on this train, need to push that, because that is what's going to retain your customer. That is the excitement that people need. And I think it's great that, you know, people have magic mix music sound things and all that to help people. I think all of that's fantastic. You know, but we need to maintain the idea that just anybody can do it. You stop with this pressure of, oh, well, you can get 10,000 downloads, you can get advertising. That's not going to retain anybody. It's unobtainable, actually. And I think that we even, and this kind of gave me a thought that, you know, for comments, I hate using the CAC term, but for activity pub interactions, social interact, as it's technically known, maybe that should be something the hosting company should be pushing instead of relying on the apps to do all this work. That was actually something James said.
I think so too.
And I caught myself going, yeah, you know, I think you're right there. I think that's a really good point. We have, because of the push we have made, because of the integrations we have done, we actually got something to be done that people said couldn't be done for a decade, was Apple actually did something. Now, yeah, typical Apple fashion, you know, they do it their own way, and, you know, their shit don't stink, and they're better with their transcripts. I don't care. They link to our namespace, and it's a validation of what we're doing. I believe we can push many more of these things. You know, is it unthinkable that they would allow you to connect a wallet, et cetera, in the future? I don't know. But I know that my boy Vic is now pushing 2.0 apps because he loves it. He loves the idea of seeing validation come in. And his hosting company is Blueberry, because Blueberry allows that. And he was able to figure it out himself. You know, he got a wallet and everything was all set up. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. I pointed him towards Saturn, because Saturn relaunched their stats Saturn.fly.dev.
It's a wonderful URL.
No, it's a horrible URL. But, you know, Conchax is still out there. And then, of course, for the more advanced, you know, Helipad. And the same goes for live. You know, this is the trend. People love listening to live. They just love it. And, you know, what do we have? I don't even know what we have in the boardroom right now. It's like maybe, 20 people? Doesn't matter. It's that interaction. It's these things that are going back and forth. It's fulfill. If you and I just did the show and had nothing but stats and podcast index.social, I think we'd be a lot less motivated.
Oh, for sure. Totally. I don't know what it is about, because it's no different than just looking at a spreadsheet. Like, if you get, okay, it's the difference between, if we're just talking about purely financial, I mean, like there's a lot more to it. It's a psychological thing more than financial, but let's just put it in financial terms just for illustration's purposes. If your company is doing, if you just get a spreadsheet at the end of the quarter, saying, well, you just, you know, you made this much profit. Mm. I mean, that's great, but it's not what you would call exciting.
spreadsheets are not sexy.
No, but if you're a sales guy and you're getting those commission checks every month, that's a different thing. There's something about, I don't know how to explain it.
Value for value. I put this work into it. I got something back.
But it's more like, I think the difference with boosts and streaming sats is that you're getting pushed. You're getting real time communication. Mm-hmm. It feels like, when somebody listens to your show, okay, I think I'm zeroing in on this right now. Okay. So when I listen to a podcast, I can't control the show. You hit the play button and you're now you've turned yourself over to the host. They're in control. Mm-hmm. You're now just along for the ride, and there's an excitement there because you're not sure what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. Because you're relinquishing your control. Yes, you've become passive, and you're experiencing the podcast. that value for value as streaming stats flips that back on the podcaster to where now the podcaster is doing the same thing. They've relinquished control and they're watching, seeing things happen mm-hmm. in real time mm-hmm. as these events come back to them.
Yeah.
It's like the most pure two-way street because it's almost like as the podcaster, you're watching this event happen the same way your audience is, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, there's a financial aspect to it. And it's always nice to make some money and that kind of thing. But like when the harp triggered a while ago, we didn't know that was going to happen and it makes it fun.
Yeah.
It makes the whole experience fun because now you've engaged your audience and they're able to bring you on an unexpected journey that you can't control. I've never thought about it like that. That's a really cool idea.
It's important because I'm saying this for our hosting company partners. They're the most stable part of the entire ecosystem. And the amount of time and energy, it may have been nothing for them, I don't know, but what Buzzsprout put into the fan mail app, I mean, I wish they would have put that energy into a social interact. They're a big player when they do something. Yeah. And in fact, they were instrumental in moving a lot of these things by adopting transcripts and chapters and all of these things early on. And as one goes, so go the rest. And then I love seeing the 2.0 native companies. I mean, these guys. I think that if you look at them on a pure profitability scale, they're probably outdoing percentage-wise bigger companies because it's one guy, right? One guy who can do everything and can still handle the relatively low amount of customer support, but they're really pushing the envelope, really moving the needle on things. I see what Sam is doing with TrueFans. I mean, he's out of control. He's out of control.
He is out of control.
He's selling books and there's all kinds of stuff happening, which is great. I mean, it's beautiful. It's not all quite, there's not a lot of ecosystem behind him yet, but he's
working. It's madness. Yeah,
it's pure madness. But the idea that you want to give somebody joy for just being themselves, I'd like to get back to that. That's what the podcast industrial complex, it kind of clicked for me. I was having a couple of conversations with people. I'm like, where did we go wrong? We're kind of talking about this last week, but radio's main function, and I've been in radio since I was 15 years old with a 5-watt transmitter in my little village south of Amsterdam. Radio has always been a local medium. So whether it was the kids in my neighborhood going, "Hey man, I heard your signal," my mom driving me around the block to the closed hospital radio station at the Tulip Hospital in Amstelveen, where it was literally a captured audience. They could not leave. And we, basically just playing requests for them from their family, et cetera, for people who are in the hospital.
Actually sounds really fun.
Oh, it was great fun. To the pirate radio stations. Yeah, we had 150 watts. We were only covering Amsterdam. We called ourselves the rhythm of the capital, that we were just playing dance music, but really for a dance oriented city at the time. To Z100 in New York, even though that was, 50,000 watts, top of the Empire State Building, 50,000 watts,
the flamethrower,
WHTZ, New York. It was still local radio. I was talking about the local events, about the mayor, all these things that were local. Now, Elvis Duran, who I know really well, I've known Elvis when he was still in radio in Austin in the late 90s. And he became the morning guy in New York at Z100. Of course, everything got consolidated. He went to, I think they got bought by iHeart. And so he now is the morning show guy in 8 cities, 8 top markets. And yeah, they've localized stuff, in between records. Hey, it's Elvis Duran in New York. Hey, it's Elvis Duran in Houston. So they've localized that. But it's no longer local. And we've lost our way in radio. And I'd like to bring that back. And now we have all of that capability. In fact, I've been toying with the idea of really just starting a local Fredericksburg, a Fredericksburg local show that, and it should be live. And I don't know if it's every morning or whatever, but it needs to be live. It's a podcast. You can listen whenever you want.
Please do a morning show. Hey, for Greater Fredericksburg, weather and traffic on the 10th.
There's a lot going on in Fredericksburg, and we only have one weekly newspaper, and it's very politically motivated, and it's very left, which is, you know, contrary to a lot of people who live around here.
I see that pollen count's up to 2,500 today. Y'all be careful out there.
There's a lot going on in Fredericksburg that is not discussed. There is no, and all the towns and cities really have is a Facebook page where everyone yells at each other and it's useless. So
yeah, a call-in show would be great.
Thank you. Even just a local call-in show. So I've given myself the edict to lift 1,000 voices across America. I haven't figured out what that means yet, but I'm working on it. And it's actually, you know, this guy Fernando. Hold on a second. Let me grab this thing.
Fernando.
Fernando is
corrupt.
Where'd that come from?
Did that come through?
What was that?
Sorry. That's
that was you?
The Bluetooth does work actually on the mix board.
I was looking. I was like, corrupt. I don't think I put that into helipad. That's so, okay, weird.
I forgot that I hooked up the Rodecaster to Bluetooth. Okay.
So he's a kid who he came to America from Brazil with $100 in his pocket. And so he has a full-time job, but he started this company, Audio Sigma. Let me see if I can find the
Audio Sigma.
Audio Sigma. Yeah, here we go. AudioSigma.com. Sigma. And actually, Todd turned it on to me. And so, you know, we got to talking. And so he's now built this thing called...
Ooh, these are pretty.
Yeah, the Pod Mobile. And it was all analog, basically transistor based, and now he's done a DSP version, and he's actually sent me one. I haven't tested it out. I've tested out his other ones. So here is a device that is about $300, and it really does everything. It does everything your Rodecaster can do, but limited. You know, it's for one or two mics. It does have the loop back for your computer. You can actually power it from the computer. It doesn't even have an external supply. But my point is, Here's an entry-level device, and maybe I have to do some courseware or something. Thank you, Sam, Sethi, and Dovidas for getting that set up, because now there's a way to do it, to do courseware, to help people just use your own voice, have a good sound. I just need people to... I mean, your sound just has to be good. This device, I've tested these other ones of his. They're dynamite. I mean, I said, you should be handing this out to roving radio reporters, because you can clip it on your belt, plug it into your phone. It sounds fantastic. But, you know, like, we need to get back to that place and stop with the, it all has to be professional. It all has to sound big. It all has to be perfectly, you know, listen. I love James Cridland, the way he speaks. I love his imperfections. I know he has a stutter. I love that. That makes him a human being to me. And he doesn't edit it out. He could easily do it, but he doesn't.
And Todd. I love Todd's, yes, Todd's delivery.
Todd, yes. Todd has a voice that is, I mean, if you would go to a radio station, they'd laugh you out of the building. That voice, no. But that's what makes it so beautiful. And these are guys who do stuff live. Todd and Rob, they do stuff live. And even when they're boring me to death, I can listen to them live. It's exciting. I can send a boost. I can rag on them. This is where we need to get back to with podcasting. And we need to just take a breather on this incessant, nonstop advertising video. This is why no one's making money in podcasting, is because I've got to hire an editor. Jen Briney, I love her. You know, Dvorak trained her, I would say. She does value for value, but she gives away a lot of her value because she has someone edit for her.
Yeah, that's steep.
Whereas if we just learn to be a little bit better, you know, by doing it, Go ahead and stumble and make mistakes. I have to credit my ex-wife, my ex-ex-wife, my first wife. When I was just starting out, 19 years old, I was on television for the whole country. I was doing radio, but the television mainly, and we do the show, it was once a week, half the country watched, and we'd be watching at home, and I'd be, I can't believe I flubbed that. Oh, I hate, I'm mad at myself because I flubbed a word, I stumbled over something, and she would look at me and go, you're not a robot. That makes you human. And then I took that to heart, and ever since I've given up on it, and I think I've been pretty successful in my career. Yeah, my voice in career by leaving that stuff in.
We had this exact conversation with my daughter last night. So she's in a band, and they had a gig at an art auction, and it was basically like just a background gig for these high dollar art auctions at this local gallery, and people were drinking and stuff. And it's her and four of her buddies, and they played, they played Boots Are Made for Walking.
Yes. Nancy Sinatra classic. Doom, 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 doom,
doom, doom, doom. They played Creep by Radiohead.
I'm a creep. I'm doing a little extra. I'm a winner.
They played, what's the Jets.
Oh. Na 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 da. Bum dum 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 bum bum. That one? We're sucking really bad now. One, two, three, take a look at me. That's the one?
Yeah, that, yeah. Yeah, that, I can't remember. They played that one. I can't remember. The name escapes me. But they played a nice little set, and so after it's over, she's like, I messed up, on Creep. I didn't come in at the right part, and I was like, we're like, hey man, that's the beauty.
Yeah, are you gonna be my girl? This is the one. Here we go.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Yeah, who just hit us with the baller boost? Hold on a second.
I don't know.
Someone hit us with the baller boost. Phantom Power Media. Dave, this is Phantom Power Media. Hello, Dave. Tell your daughter to apply for our bands at Bitcoin stage in July. It's an ad. It's a native ad.
I will deliver this message. Yes. She'll have to pay.
I'm going to remove it if you guys don't stop that.
But she'll have to pay for a cover band, cover music rights, right? Mechanical rights.
Right. Yeah. If she does that one.
Yeah. But, we're telling her like, hey, this is, you're playing with a band. You've only been playing with a band for a couple months. This is how you learn, by failing.
Yes.
You know, you because that's another thing with the
auto-tune. Kind of, that's another thing that screwed everything up.
Oh, so much. Giving up control. That's another time that you give up control. And that's one of the things that makes playing live with a band so exciting.
Yes.
And Eric PP literally said the exact same thing
at the same time. I saw it.
That's what makes it exciting, is that you don't know what's going to happen, and you're putting your own performance in the hands of other people, because the drummer may screw up, and you know what? It's your job to save the drummer.
Yes.
And everybody's in it together.
She play bass? Does she play bass?
This band is kind of cool because they all swap up and play everything.
Oh, excellent.
One of the songs she plays drums, one song she plays guitar, one song that she plays bass. And nice. They all kind of, like in between songs, they all shuffle, which makes it even more complicated. Cool. So it's really like, of course you're going to mess up.
That's really cool.
But your drummer's now. Yeah, right. But anyway, I think you're right. I think the return to podcasting is perfect for local. Because you can, imagining that, especially now that we can do live over podcast apps. I mean, that's perfect. Just imagining a return to that, to your hospital DJ scenario where it's like, you know, hey, floor three, Myrtle in room 302, you know, we hear you, you know, swing time.
Did I ever tell you what we would do when we had our show on Friday night? And I was the engineer. So what you do is you go, before the show started, you'd hand out request forms, which are just pieces of paper. I was 15, so that's 45 years ago. And and they would fill it out, and then we'd take those back and we'd start the show. But the studio was in the corner of kind of an auditorium, not huge, but, you know, where they would have, like a 3x a conference room, just put, you know, and the window, the double glass was, you know, right there. So it was in the corner. So you could see people in the studio, and the studio could see out. So what we would do is we would actually get the kids and we would roll their beds down into the auditorium.
Oh, that's cool.
And then, but we were playing, I remember it well, Iggy Pop, Lust for Life. Remember that song? I got a lust for life. Boom, 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 boom. A little bit like the Jets, actually. Huh. And so while that was playing, we go out and we play bumper beds with the kids. And we'd be bumping the beds against you. I actually learned how to reinsert an IV from that experience. Like, oh, crap. All right, kid, come over here. Just like squirting all over the place. But yeah, and it was arguably one of the most fun times of my career. And it was unpaid. It was just volunteer work. But yes, local communities of interest, geographic communities. But I think we've the wide open opportunity. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to prove this. Even if I'm not hosting, if I'm just exec producing or whatever I am doing, because that's part of my mission is I need to find new people to do stuff. I think it can be run where it would pay for itself, and that people would, you know, maybe it's not a full-time gig, but I think a local community would support a local station, a local show. I think it would support that. It really would.
Well, you already did. In the now lost to history, the lost episode of Podcasting 2.0, that you did a request, a music request show. And was over boost.
That was the most highly boosted episode ever. Yes.
Ever of all time. Yes. And this, like, so there's no, you now have in 2.0 apps, you can now do live streams and boosts, and you can get, that's, there you go. You have a call-in request show right there. So I think, you know, the other thing, like, so my daughter, my oldest daughter, she's 22. the Lost at Faith at Work show. Yeah, that's right. She's in communications, like mass communications. And so she was told recently, basically, that I forgot who this was.
You got no future, kid.
It was almost like that. She's majoring currently in mass communications, and the person told her basically, do not think that you're going to go into local television because it's dead.
Oh yeah,
it's exactly what you've been saying the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. He said, "Local affiliate stations
shutting down, You know, Chad F. just posted in the boardroom. He said, "You just described homegrown hits. If you've never heard that show, it's exactly right." Also, the No Agenda Stream, which is now that's been around so long that that's really become its own entity, and that is 24 hours a day. But people literally tune in to hear Darren O on Thursdays and Sundays. They tune in to hear Nick the Rat on Wednesdays. They're tuning in. Then you have In the Smoker. You've got Beers with Buds, Buds with Buds, Beers Smoking Buds. There's all these different shows, and it's all within that same ecosystem of a very simple chat room. The boostograms have become super important. And it's not that Darren O is retiring. No, it's the feedback mechanism. We say, hey man, you boosted. Cool. You see it in the chat room. The host responds to it. This is stuff that is working. The proof is there, and we need a little more engagement, I think, from the hosting companies. Not all, and you know, I'm generalizing to a huge degree, and I'm also extremely grateful what all the hosting companies have done so far, but we can do more. And
I don't see why these local reporters for local stations couldn't just strike out on their own and do a local oriented podcast.
And we'll see some of that, but a lot of that culture and attitude is not easy to break. I mean, the idea that you're going from, we'll be right back after these messages to, begging for money, grifting, you know, all the stuff that gets thrown at your head. That's a very tough change for most people. Now, I wanted, as a part of this, since we have the Phantom people in, the NMPA, National Music Publishers Association, sent a very damning letter to Spotify, and this is important and pertains to us, and Jim actually posted on Podcasting Next Social about this. They say... let me see where this is. It has come to our attention that Spotify displays lyrics and reproduces and distributes music videos and podcasts using musical works without the consent of or compensation to the respective publisher and or administrators, our members in parens, who control the copyrights in the musical compositions. As such, these uses of musical works on the Spotify platform are not licensed or will soon become unlicensed. Mm-hmm. So this is very interesting. This is probably more about lyrics and the music videos, but the fact they put podcasts in there is important because you're going to see podcasts come down very quickly from Spotify, and a lot of them, because people are using music in so many different ways that is unlicensed, because you literally can't license it from the traditional systems. And Spotify will not think twice. It'll be whoop, gone, whoop, gone, whoop, gone, whoop, gone. It's going to be, they're going to be running algos on it. It's going to be gone, gone, gone. And even if it's just mute, they're not even going to check and see if it's licensed. They're just going to remove it. Big opportunity. The main thing we need to shore up, and we have a version of it, we don't have everything perfect, but I think we need to implement the music license, the remote item license, whatever we call it, for inclusion of someone else's work in your podcast. I like the remote item license better than a music license. It's the same thing. So this is not, I'm not talking about an RSS feed of songs. Now, there's a whole bunch of issues that have come up that we need to discuss, but purely remote item license. Yes, you can use this under the value for value auspices. It's been written. Mm-hmm. It's out there. I think it just needs to be added to the namespace and linked so people can include it.
Is that the case? I honestly know. So I feel so ill-equipped to deal with something like this that I feel like I need somebody else to just give me the wording to put.
I'm going to carry this.
To me, where it fell off a cliff was all of a sudden it took a turn into, yeah, and we need to be able to block certain apps from being able to play certain music. And I was like, whoa. I mean that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll carry this, Dave, and I'll get the consensus and everything. So there's a couple things. One, this is the main thing we have to understand. If you have an RSS feed and you have an enclosure, and that enclosure is an MP3, there is no difference between it being Dreb Scott's ISO a feed, no agenda, 3.5 hour shows, or a 3-minute song. In the world of podcasting, they are equal. Ergo, therefore, if you're going to... you like that? That's my lawyer talk.
you sound like a philosopher.
That's right. Ergo, therefore. The remote item license is how I view this. So it's not because it's a song, because I feel that if I make a great joke or there's a great bit and someone wants to include that in their show, just as valuable to me as someone who spent 3 years writing a song. You may not think that's fair, but in the world that we're dealing with, they're equal. And so we need the mechanism. If you're going to include something in your show and it's in the realm of value for value, you should be able to say from this moment in time to this moment in time, switch the wallets. It's coming from over there, and I think we can add into that a minimum requirement. So you got to give me minimum 50%, you know, of the value block. Take more if you want. I mean, I think that's, and it's always all going to be gentleman's agreement, gentlewoman's agreement, general zur's agreement. But we need that at a minimum to protect ourselves, even though we're all going to get kicked off of Spotify. And it's all coming. This is why we built this, Dave, because they will not discriminate. You got music in your podcast, you're done. Goodbye. They're not going to check. They don't care. They got no infrastructure to see. It's just like YouTube. Like TikTok, it'll be muted. All of these problems are coming. But we can solidify for ourselves that we have the agreement and we're all cool with each other.
So you think they're going to start taking down stuff that's not even...
Guaranteed.
That's not even related to this.
An example. Our church...
Which I believe.
I'll tell you why. So our church has a worship team, which, as we all know, is Christian for band. So they have a worship team. And the worship team...
Does your drummer have the plexiglass?
You better believe it, bro. He's got the whole cage. Yeah. You better believe it. Yeah, he's got the cage. So the worship team licenses music from, you know, there's a whole industry and it puts the words up on the screen so everybody can sing holy, holy, holy. And hands in the air like we just don't care. And it's licensed. They pay rights. And those rights are also for use in recordings on YouTube. And every month, at least once, YouTube takes down one of the sermons because they say you got a strike because you use the licensed work, even though they have the right to use it. They have the paperwork. It's backed up. It's an established system, which has been going for decades. The system still takes the whole thing down. So that's going to happen at Spotify now. It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
So we need our stuff to be tight so that when content producers, whether they make music or audiobooks or whatever it is, we need a system that is fair and open and everybody can participate in. Hey, I made 100 sats on this. Here's your 80.
So and the license in the feed is a signal.
Yes. Yes.
This has been covered.
Yep.
Essentially.
Covered. Yeah. It's just like Creative Commons. Yeah. Except, you know, we do it under this particular license. Now, I know that we're going to run into all kinds of problems down the line and disagreements, et cetera, over music itself. I can't deal with that right now. All I can deal with is the inclusion of a remote item. That part I want to shore up so that when the Exodus takes place, people know they can come here. They can come into this ecosystem and they can promote the apps that understand and do this and promote the apps that give, that pass the value through. We will overcome. Amazing grace.
We shall overcome. Yeah.
We will. So remote item license is what I'm looking at.
Okay.
A remote. Okay. So you can use this content, no matter what it is, as a remote item, here's my baseline requirement. And the technology actually handles most of it. The technology handles, you know, if it needs to be surfaced, what this is, you know, just like when I look at, I'm a podcast guru. I look at the Sidestream Music podcast. By the way, Cody did a great, great episode this week. Was music Tony Hawk screwed up on and didn't put in his game. Really good. It's all B for V music. Yeah, it's very fun. It's a great promotion. I can go and I hit the V for V tab and I see all the songs. I can save those songs to a playlist. I can boost them separately. I can play them separately. I can get into the artist. I mean, that stuff, that technology, the remote item, thank you, Alex Hayes, is taken care of. It's taken care of. All of that is done. So our stuff will be tight. So that whenever anybody thinks they're going to come and mess with us, they won't even come. They'll be like, oh, let those guys play over there. They're not the real music industry. Okay. But we've got something that no one has.
What does the remote item license actually protect against?
It protects against nothing. It's an agreement. It's just like Creative Commons. If you really want to take someone to court, you can. I've proven the Creative Commons copyright works in court for that very reason. But it still comes down to a basic understanding and agreement. Like everything, it's only as good as the paper it's written on. It's not protecting against, it really doesn't protect you against anything except someone using it and not passing on any payment to you. But we have no cops. We're never going to have cops to go out there. But you can say, hey, man, this is under the remote item license. So would you please make sure that you put that into your feed properly? That's really all that right. You can do.
And that, so it's a matter of if you're going to use this, you need to use a remote value split.
Yes. And to answer Cotton Gin's question, yes, the splits accomplish this, but it gives you a little bit of backup with a legal document. And I think we should have a minimum requirement. And the minimum should always be baseline 50-50. But as you can say, you know what, I'll settle for, I want 90%. Now, can you stop someone from doing it? No, you'd have to bring action against them. But guess what? This is a new world. This is about just making it clear what I'd like and that I want this system in play. It's solidifying what splits are. It's solidifying what the remote item is. Yes, please use my content in this manner. Here's the requirements that I have. Yeah, if you want protection, go to ASCAP BMI. See ya.
It keeps you from built. I think I'm understanding this now because what you're saying is it keeps you from having to build essentially the exact same structure that already exists.
Exactly.
Again, which will have the exact same problems as the other system.
Of course.
It's centralized and punitive.
Yes. Very punitive. Now, if you think you're going to get rich, if anyone thinks they're going to get rich, by all means, don't have your music played on podcasts. Don't get it played anywhere. You know, put it into iTunes and have fun. Good luck. Absolutely. If you want to have an audience and you want to have value returned to you, that's why you're with us.
Yeah.
There's not enough room in the world for all the people to be successful and making quit your job money. Look at this podcast, 180 episodes. I'm not quitting any job.
No, for sure.
But I love what I do, and I love my truck.
That's right. There's not the creator middle class is just, it's never going to be a thing.
No. I think you can't. I think, touring, I think you can do a lot. A lot of people have a lot of love for what they do. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, we're an unrestrictive system. We're, the traditional systems are all, why is everything failing? Because they no longer control the distribution. Once podcasting came in, distribution was open. Why does everybody want to move to YouTube? Why? Because they control the distribution. Move to Spotify because they control the distribution. They controlled it. That's the way it's always worked. And those days are just over. See the $1 billion Spotify blue.
This is actually sort of tangents into, I kind of wanted to talk about that Jack Dorsey interview. Did you read that?
I did.
The one in Pirate Wires?
Yeah, I did. I read the whole thing. You bet.
He said some stuff in there that was pretty noteworthy to me. And I think you talking about this kind of reminded me of him. He talked some about Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm.
He says, here's one thing he said. He said, the anti-Twitter. He's talking about Blue Sky. He says, what happened is people started seeing Blue Sky as something to run to away from Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that's not Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's great. And Blue Sky saw this exodus of people from Twitter show up. And it was a very, very common crowd. It was designed to be controlled by the people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But little by little, they started asking Jay, she's
the CEO. Yeah.
And the team for moderation tools and to kick people off. And unfortunately, they followed through with it. Everything we wanted around decentralization, everything we wanted in terms of an open source protocol, suddenly became a company with VCs and a board. Mm-hmm. That's not what I wanted. And that's not what I intended to help create. Around the same time, I found Nostr. We don't know who the leader is. It's like this anonymous Brazilian guy. It has no board, no company behind it, no funding. It's a truly open protocol. The development environment is moving fast. I gave a bunch of money to them. Okay, so that's the quote. And he seems to be defining, I've got a few things to say about this, but he seems to be defining openness as a protocol that is not backed by any company. Mm-hmm. To him, if it has a company in control of it, it's not truly open.
I find that to be true. This is why I like Bitcoin, no CEO.
Right.
This is why I like RSS, no CEO.
But do you think is that always the case, though? And I'm going to bring this back around to what we were talking about.
I'll tell you why. I think it's always the case because it's never been the case. Bitcoin was the first for me, even though I've come to appreciate RSS equally. When you have something that is truly just a format or a protocol, either way, and to a degree, I think ActivityPub is that as well. These are the things that are being implemented and used by people because they can, because they don't need to pay a developer fee or any of this stuff. Anybody can do it. That was always the idea behind RSS. You know, people will come to me, man, now, so do you have your own plane? What are you talking about? Well, you invented RSS. You invented podcasting. Yeah. You invented podcasting. I said, bro, if we had done that, it would have gone nowhere. No one would be using it. The whole point is that it just is. It just now, is.
And when you're talking, and you start talking about licensing fees and these kinds of, I understand that. But is it? Like Blue Sky doesn't have
a fee. Hold on. I didn't talk about a licensing fee. You mean in regards to the music stuff?
No. I'm talking, you said, royalty, like fees for implementation and these like.
Yeah. Developer, like API access, developer. Yeah. You have to, the toolkit, all this kind of stuff.
But that's the interesting issue here is Blue Sky is a published protocol. Mm-hmm. You can implement it yourself just like you can ActivityPub. It's an open specification. And in that sense, it's no different than Nostr. But he's saying he has a problem with it.
Okay, well, can we separate a couple of things? Because I also see stuff in the boardroom being discussed. There's a difference between a protocol and the implementation. So when I say ActivityPub right away, yeah, but there's all kinds of libtards on Mastodon. Mastodon is not ActivityPub. Nostr, the social network, is not Nostr, the protocol. You see, the big mistake of Nostr was the social network. Because only people in this boardroom, and not everybody even, understand that there's more to that than the implementation. So the implementation of RSS was initially only blogs. I think if you say RSS, people still think blogs. They don't think podcasts. They certainly don't think music distribution or audiobooks or courseware or any of that stuff. And that's the hardest thing we're doing right now is we're moving people away from thinking this is just for blogs or just for podcasting. And this can be for all kinds of distribution. That's the hardest thing we're doing.
See, okay, so he says, to back up a second, he says in another part, he says, so what if we created a team that was independent to us, he's talking about when he was at Twitter, that built a protocol that Twitter could use and then build on top of, then we wouldn't have the same liabilities because the protocol would be an open standard like HTTP or SMTP. Twitter would become the interface and we could build valuable business by competing to be the best view on top of this massive corpus of conversation that's happening in real time. And, he says, I know it's early and Nostr is weird and hard to use, but if you truly believe in censorship resistance and free speech, you have to use technologies that actually enable that and defend your rights, blah, 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 because those are technologies no company or government can compromise, but corporations can be compromised and they have been.
I think there's a difference between, okay, let me see, because I hear what you're saying, I hear what he's saying, and I think he's incorrect in some things.
I do too.
Twitter started as an RSS-based system, and that's why it failed all the time, because they tried to centralize RSS, and they came out of, the first term was microblogging. So we all had blogs, and it was kind of a groovy system because we had a product called Google Reader, but there are many others, and that never got to flourish, that business, unlike podcast apps, that created the product out of the protocol. Dorsey is interspersing the censorship-resistant nature of a protocol that allows you to communicate with social media, which is a shit product.
Yes.
That's the problem. Social media is a horrible product. It's a horrible product. I can't put it any other. Now, you take ActivityPub in the context of a reasonably closed system like podcastindex.social, it's an okay product. And I have an account, just podcastindex.social, and I have at server level have blocked certain instances. And from time to time, I go through it and go, nope, nope. I go through the public timeline, nope. Because I protect our community. And so it actually functions as a reasonable product for the mission that we have. But are we really doing social media there? No. In fact, I've asked some people, I said, hey, could you not post that here? Because that's just going to create a whole conversation that has nothing to do with what we're doing here.
It's more, podcastindex.social is more like just a big version of GitHub discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yeah. A little less stringent, I think, but yeah.
Yeah. It's very specific. It's just so hyper specific to kind of one topic that it keeps some of that and your moderation on the back end keeps some of that away.
So what Dorsey's mistake is, in my opinion, is he is equating free speech and censorship resistant speech with a social network. No, the hard no, because it's not, it's a crap show. There's people arguing, then, you know, it's like comments, depending on how they're displayed, even that determines the product of something that can be censorship resistant. So podcasting is censorship resistant, and it's very different. And you can use RSS for a social network. See what Twitter did in the beginning. But that's a crap product. Podcast apps are an outstanding product. People like them. People use them. Wherever you get your podcast, it's a great distribution mechanism. So we have to make a distinction between the protocol and the product. Ooh, there you go.
Yeah. I think that's where I'm struggling with what he's saying, and where I disagree with him is you can have open protocols that are developed by private companies. I mean, that's just the protocol itself. Take the iTunes namespace. I mean, it's open. We're all allowed to use it. It's not like the USB-C.
Right, but it holds everybody back because unlike the podcast namespace, where there's no other incentive other than just to keep the servers running, you know, and no one, well, I guess technically it's only as good as the people, but when you have a corporation, corporations have boards, corporations have targets, corporations have to make money, corporations have a reason for existence. Podcast Index LLC has one mission: to make itself unnecessary.
to destroy itself.
That is our ultimate mission. In the meantime, keep everything running, have a backstop. So if we all keel over, then the servers keep running on auto pay, etc. But the mission is to make ourselves obsolete. And I think we stated that clearly with all these censorship resistant things, which protect us mainly from the corporate world.
He said, he's talking about Blue Sky. He says it was the anti-Twitter, and he's talking about why he left Blue Sky. So he deleted his account and he left Blue Sky. He says it was the anti-Twitter. People were literally running from Twitter to Blue Sky, and that's not a way to build something successful. So he says,
but they weren't running away from Twitter to Blue Sky, the protocol. They were running to the product, Blue Sky. Yeah.
And so he talks about surviving, and this is where I'm bringing it back around a little bit, because he says, all that said, I really respect Jay. She's the Blue Sky CEO. Mm-hmm. She was under a lot of pressure to survive.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, you know, when they started doing moderation and this kind of thing, it's such, like he says, it's such a crazy thing. It seems like the core leadership team at Twitter around you was just totally, this is the question, the guy asking Dorsey the question. He says, it seems like the core leadership team at Twitter around you was just totally opposed to elements throughout the company, from the sales team to the board. It's almost as if the company were fundamentally in conflict with itself. He says it was also pretty reactive to what was happening in the world.
Well, because to be censorship resistant, there has to be zero financial incentive. And by definition, if you have a company, you're going to have financial incentive one way or the other.
And I want this idea. He said that she was under a lot of pressure to survive as a company. I think you said it fine earlier, but I mean, just to state it more clearly, let's set a goal to never try to survive as a company.
No, we actually, our goal is to destroy ourselves. That's even better. That's the best goal ever.
If Podcast Index dies, it just dies. It's fine.
I was talking to someone today, and you know, who want to use the Podcast Index as a back end. And which, you know, a lot of people in this boardroom do. And I think because there's a relationship and there's several years of history now, people know how we operate, know what we do and what we don't do. And they trust us. There's a huge trust factor there. And I don't think we've ever violated that trust. And I don't, you know, there's just that we're good guys. Now, but someone from the outside says, hey, you know, so what happens if Podcast Index goes away? There goes my business, because I'm trusting that to be the back end. And I always say, well, let me tell you, first of all, we have $28,000 in cash in the bank, and that money is on auto pay. Then that, and you know, it costs real money to keep everything running every single month. And we're expanding and we'll need more over time. But in general, we think 3 to 5 years, if the money stopped today, we could have 3 to 5 years. It would continue. There'd be no extra development, et cetera, but that would be it. Dave and Adam, don't take any of that money for personal use. But I said, within that 3 to 5 years, we hope that there is just an index space. It's just out there. And you don't have to rely on us. It will be just like Tor, you know, or Hashspace or whatever it is. It will just be. The way to get in there will be. The way to get it out will be. And this is what things like Podping and ActivityPub, and we're figuring all this out, and things will, you know, it's our mission. It's our ultimate mission to make ourselves obsolete. So podcasting will just be. It won't be a place or a company. It will be podcasting. It's just there. Tap in.
Podcasting 2.0 will survive because it doesn't need any money.
Right. The index
Podcast Index does need money.
Yeah.
And if the market determines it should die, then it'll die. That's fine.
It's not going to.
No problem.
It's not going to.
And here's what happens. The day that does happen, I cut everything down to the bone. We can run core services for about $300 a month. And, you know, with everything.
With restrictions on API access, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And that'll tick along for a long time.
Maybe we just poop out a database every week. I don't know. It could be any number of things.
I could do that paying for it myself out of my own wallet. So I'm not worried about that. It's just we're trying to survive as a company and like keep yourself from dying. I mean, that's where all the bad stuff starts. You know, that's where things start to always go wrong.
That's exactly right. It always goes wrong.
Yeah. So I'm just like, you know, the world moves on, things go away. So if we are, you know, if for some reason the economy just completely tanked and everybody just in the funding for the index dried up, that's fine. We'll move on. But he said something else about brand advertising. He said, I do agree with him. He says, I think the core critical sin was choosing the advertising model to begin with. Brand advertising is not like direct advertisement.
That's right.
Which is more programmatic. It requires something like a Disney to essentially do you a favor.
Yeah.
Because the only players that matter to them are Google and Facebook. Snapchat, Twitter, everything else doesn't matter. And these are ads that are essentially throwaway money for them, but we made that choice in order to go public.
Yeah, that's right. And that was to satisfy the initial investors, and you go all the way back up the chain.
Mm-hmm. He said, we needed a model. Facebook's model was really good, so we came up with an ad program and ran with it. And I came back to the company a year after the IPO, and we were seeing a decline in growth, and that manifested in a decline in ad revenue. So our first focus was to rework the product so we were growing again. And then second was to get off this dependency on advertisement. And when you're entirely dependent on that, if a brand like Procter & Gamble or Unilever doesn't like what's happening on your platform,
you're toast.
And they threaten to pull the budget which accounts for like 20% of your revenue, you have no choice.
Yeah. In that interview, he also says that it was easy for Elon to fire half the company because half the company was in sales.
Yeah, that's right.
And trust me when I say that the largest military contractor in the world, Elon Musk, because that's what he is. Look at his real businesses. Yeah. His mission is not to give you freedom of speech. It's just the cost of doing business for him. By the way, he's giving you freedom of speech, not freedom of reach. That's also in that article, which is true. Mm-hmm. And I see that all the time. Hey, I get no numbers on this post. Yeah, okay, fine. I wonder why. All he's doing is making sure there's enough excitement and action around X to keep everybody engaged as he rolls out his quasi podcasting infrastructure, his make money on your writing infrastructure. So he's trying to be Substack. He's trying to be Patreon, but not really, you know, not really with subscriptions, but he'll roll that out. And it all comes down to, he wants to be your bank. He's got 38 money transmitter licenses. He'll have them all. And if there's not enough action around his x.com, he'll post something outrageous to stir it up again. He just needs to keep everybody engaged and on Twitter all the time until he has everything rolled out so he can be your bank. That's it. That's it. He wants to be your bank.
Here's the quote you were talking about. He says, it was a brand advertising business, and a brand advertising business needs a huge sales staff. Over 50 to 60% of Twitter employees were in sales.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But make no mistake, this is not about Elon trying to give you freedom of speech. No. By the way, can I just do a quick namespace thing here?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, I'm not going to play the jingle. Leslie has been emailing me. We got a long-distance dedication from Leslie. Leslie says that she is working on audiobooks, and she has a request for the season tag. which I thought was quite reasonable, because I'm like, oh, we updated season. We got season tags. She says, yeah, but it's not enough. I will quote from her correspondence with me. I know that most hosting companies support season numbers, but what would also be helpful is if we could get a season level art and titles.
Ooh.
She says, I think that would be a great help for audiobooks and maybe even for musicians, as they could put multiple works out as seasons within a single feed and distinguish between them rather than having separate feeds for each.
I think that's a neat idea.
I think it's an interesting way to look at it. You know, we were just, because she says, you know, I can't afford to have a new RSS feed for every single audiobook.
Because so, then you got to get people to subscribe to it. Yeah. So, I think that's an, because you, that should just be an attribute on the
optional attribute. Optional attribute. So optional image and title, I think, is what she's specifically asking for. And I said,
we already have title in the season.
Titles we have, but she wants art. Do we have, because I looked at it. Are you sure we have title?
We have name. You can name a season.
Oh, you can name a season? Let me see.
Podcast name space. Let me go to the GitHub repo real quick. Docs 1.0 season.
Man, that James Cridland, his podcast namespace.org sure pops up at the top of
everything. Every time. He's got SEO juice.
No, yeah. I like that. Let me see, because I have season.
Yeah, it's the name attribute.
Okay, let me see.
Yeah, it's in the examples, like a podcast season.
Yeah. Name equals name. Yeah. So episode art.
Yeah, so we just need an image URL attribute.
And hosting companies apparently are still only offering the old iTunes namespace, I guess. The number.
For the season.
Yeah, for the season number. But the people want names and name, title, and image. So I think
we
should
add
that.
We got to give the people what they want.
People want it. There's a customer. It's a customer. Customer waiting for you right there. Podcasting 2.0 podcast. We deliver customers to you.
Are you going to play a song?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that right now. Thank you for reminding me.
I can write this up as an issue on GitHub while you're playing
the song. While I'm playing the song? Okay, good. I think I got this one from either the Phantom Music Power Hour, or I got it from the Sidestream Music Podcast. Another banger for a Friday, everybody. It's Tony Salamone with Red Light of Podcasting 2.0.
Sitting up on a fence, I'm holding both of my hands up to the sky. I fell face first into the concrete. Ooh. Now I'm running with a black guy. Saw your face on a stranger. I had to blink three times to check my sights. So do you like a little danger? Ooh, cause I'm running through the red light. Ooh, I don't need a reason, baby, it's a feeling now. Yeah. Ooh, blow me into pieces, baby, like I'm fading out. Set me on fire. Walking in a rain cloud, into my brain three lightning strikes, a burn up of my eyebrows. Ooh, with the fibrillator in my mind, all my colors changing hue. Everything is taking the shape of you. We're gonna get too high tonight. Ooh, cause we're running through the red light. Ooh, I don't need a reason, baby, it's a feeling now. Ooh, blow me into pieces, baby, like I'm fading out. Set me on fire tonight. Ooh, cause I'm running through.
phone, red light, podcasting 2.0. If you boost, if you didn't boost, go back, rewind, boost, tell them you heard it on podcasting 2.0.
That's a good one.
That's a great song. I love that track.
Add an image href attribute to the season type for season level art.
You got it in?
All right.
You nailed it?
I got it in. I got it.
That's how we roll. One song and we've updated the namespace. Beautiful. Beautiful, 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 beautiful. Love it. Whew. Got anything else for the board meeting here?
I got some stuff, but we can wait.
We always push every... Now, next week, there's no board meeting because I'm on the road. I can't do it next week, so...
That's true.
Is there anything you need to do? I'd rather go long today than mess it up.
That's all right. I've got... I didn't get much accomplished this week. I had planned on getting the resolver built for the... I didn't get much of a chance to code this week, but I want to get the... We need a resolver for translating key send addresses.
Oh.
You know, so that you can look up like a Dave at getalpi.com and convert it back to a node ID. We need that, but I want to make it where apps like Castomatic can just send one request for a whole bunch of addresses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like we do the resolution for it. So ooh. you could just do, you know, send off like 10 of these addresses. We would resolve them and hand them back in one call. Yeah. And do the caching and all that.
Nice.
Kind of stuff.
Nice.
I want to make that easy for serverless apps. Yeah. But before we put, cause I want to get that key send address thing into the value recipient tag on June 1st, but I don't want to do it without giving the serverless apps a fallback.
Yes, as we always do.
Yeah, so that's the next thing on my list. So we'll talk about that.
Okay.
I'll get it done while you're gone.
In 2 weeks, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. And
Alex is working on a top secret project for us. So.
Woo!
Yeah.
Oh.
For Podping.
Did you put him under NDA?
Indy. Yeah. Well,
so we can't talk about it. Yeah.
NDA. Yeah. It'll be fun, but,
signed a document.
Here, Alex, sign this. I know what he would say.
Yes. You'd say, sign this.
Yeah.
I was just, as I was playing that song, I'm just like jamming out to the song. I remember cause the lost episode, when you lost power at the office and I played tracks for 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. That was more fun. I've been reminiscing. My mind has been going back and forth in history. That was more fun for me as a music disc jockey than any shift I ever did on Z100, the biggest radio station in New York at the time. In fact, it was lonely. You know, you're just talking into the mic. Hello, New York. Blah, blah, and there's nothing coming back. There was no chat room. There was no boostograms. There was, you know, we had requests and someone in the back would take a request and it wasn't really a request anyway. We just pretended like, you know, okay, but this is what's next in the computer. So we're playing this.
You didn't even have Buzzsprout fan mail.
let's thank a few people, shall we? Let's use our own fan mail here. We have lots of live boosts that came in. 3438 from Billy Bones. He says, thank you for the boardroom meetings. It makes me excited for podcasting 2.0. Well, you're welcome. And you're a part of it, Billy Bones. We're all part of the boardroom. Anonymous 3333. We got Mike Dell, 1701. Hamvention boost from Dayton, Ohio, 73s. Kilo 8, Lima, Mike Juliet. Hey, the Hamvention. Forgot all about that. Yes, 73s, Kilo 5, Alpha Charlie, beaconing every 15 minutes on VAR AC, 20 meters. We got the heart boost.
Nerd.
We got the 777 from Sam Sethi. True Fans has the remote item license working. For example,
of course it does.
Of course he does. For example, we have it working for all Phantom Power music artists. We have plans to use it with Clips Next. So you grant a license for other podcasts to use your audio in another podcast and get paid like music. Beautiful, Sam. Thank you. Can you post somewhere short? Just to document how that showed you, like how that pops up so other apps can see it. That would be great. This is perfect. See, I told you I would carry this. It's so easy. The work is done for me.
Done.
Shredward, part of the Dorfelverse, 1,000 sats. Genuine variety and organicness is king, not perfection and sounding like everybody else. We call it here in the Dorfelverse, Nashvilled, when you stick to the template. Amen, brother. That's right.
Oh, is that the, it's like the...
Yeah, when you're Nashville.
The Nashville sound or whatever.
Mm-hmm, yeah. When you're perfect. But last night, it was another writing on the wall. So we were going to tune in to our favorite show, Cheers. We're on season 9. We're almost done.
Oh, you're close. We've been binging.
And so I pop open, because you know you can get it on Paramount Plus through Amazon, whatever. And right at the top, oh, there's the American Country Music Awards live on Amazon. So we pop it, you know, it's like, okay. And it was just uncomfortable to watch. It was so,
why?
Because it's so like structured and, you know, they have ads, of course. And so it's all tight on a timeline. It's unnatural. And, you know, I love Reba McEntire, but, you know, she's hosting again. And, you know, and it's just... It's they're trying to make this tight show, and it's this you know it's robotic. It doesn't feel like podcasting, where it's crazy. It's out of control.
You know, I hear songs sometimes. I mean, and honestly, Taylor Swift's catalog is like this. You just know that in 5 years minimum, AI will be able to recreate songs that are just exactly like that. They sound no different. Yeah. They're just like no, vacuous.
You can do it already. You can do it already. And there's no love. Yeah. There's no soul. It's soulless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's, do you know what's, you know, what is it? So we've been rewatching X-Files.
Yeah. Yes. You're done with the musicals. You're onto X-Files now.
No, we're intermixing. We're mixing it up. No, we've been watching musicals too, but, do you know what's great about those old shows from 80s, 90s? You don't see any computers anywhere.
Right. It's all analog. That's right.
Yeah, people's desks have like pens and paper and a phone.
Sam Malone in Cheers has a little black book. With all his babes, all his babes in it. Yes.
All the babes.
So true.
It's awesome.
Booberry 77777. Member Berry Boost for Dave.
Ooh.
Then we had the Phantom Power Media 10,000 sats. We read that one. Dave, tell your daughter to apply for our bands at Bitcoin stage in July. Good idea. Eric PP was sent the boob boost, which did come through, 8008. Salty Crayon, 777. Howdy, boardroom. Dave, don't get me started on docking station firmware. Weekly, we are updating those because they are well past the 12-month mark. The Thunderbolt ones are the worst culprit so far. Job security, right? Go podcasting!
Go podcasting!
Yeah, we love job security. There's Chad F. with his 777 boost. And I hit the delimiter. There we go.
Oh, we got a new subscriber, $10 a month from Timothy Voice.
Well, then, you've been defragmented. I haven't used that one in a while. You've been defragmented.
That's a Drebs kid, right?
Yes, it is.
That's a little drib. That's a dribbling. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We got, let's see, that's our only one-off PayPal this week, but we got some boosts. Got Steve Wilkinson, a.k.a. CG Works. Striper Boost 7777 through Castomatic says Skillet Boost. Maybe we can get a John Cooper scream.
Skillet Boost. That's our semi-striper boost. Yes. Okay.
we got a Andrew Grummet. No, 2222, a row of ducks.
Hello,
from
Andrew.
The Wherever app.
Nice.
This top secret app.
Have you ever tried that thing out? It's amazing. It's basically
the Wherever app.
Yeah, it's basically a framework of everything that we have in podcasting 2.0 just smashed into one web app.
We got to get him on the show. Do you have his contact information?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, we'll get him on the show.
Andrew, you're up, bro. You're up. You're going to be on the show. I can't wait to catch up with him. I can't wait. We got stories. I'll bet you he has stories that I have forgotten. No, in fact, I guarantee you he has stories that I've forgotten. That'll be a good one. Let's get him on.
Okay, we got Andrew. Andrew's on deck. He says, "This rocks." Heard on Podcasting 2.0, episode 179.
Yes. And Andrew, thank you. He's got everything set, you know, the wherever app boosts come through and I can see what song it was for. And I think he, he has the reply function working, which is great. I love that too.
Sweet.
I love replying to Boost. Every morning I come in and say, oh, can I reply to this? Oh, can I reply? And because it splits, usually I'm sending people back more than I received.
You're losing money on this.
I'm losing money on it, but I love it.
237. That is the number of unread emails I have in my podcast index mailbox.
It's all right. I'm plugging along, brother. I'm taking care of most of them when I can.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Jacob, J-A-K-O-B, 1234 Boost through Podverse. He says, great tunes. Well, thank you, Jacob.
By the way, the updatability of the dashboard, the control dashboard is great because now I can, you know, change someone's feed URL.
But is that working for you?
Yes, yes. Now, if the feed is already in there, double, you have to resolve that first. I've even done a couple of successful merges. Which did my head in. Because I'm like, what's merging into what? You know, like, and I merged them the wrong way. Oh, restore, reset. Okay, merge them back the other way. All right, there we go.
Undo. We need the undo button.
Control C. It's great. I'm actually able to do a lot for people. So I feel quite powerful with the capabilities I have.
I'll continue to refine that because it's still rough.
Give me root, man. Give me root access.
Come on. Root.
Give me root.
RM-RF.
Yeah. Do you know that I've actually done that?
No.
Yes. On what
folder?
Okay. Back in the on-ramp days. No, something similar. Here's what I did. So
wait, tell me somebody in on-ramp gave you root access to anything.
Oh yeah, I know. I had root access to everything. And so we had a Sun. Would have been a Sun 5, maybe?
Spark Station,
yeah. And Neuromancer was the machine's name. I remember it well. And so there was a ragtag. We had, you know, like one client and we were just trying to do stuff. And you know, I was trying to figure something out. And so I go in and I'm on the machine, right? So I have root access on the machine. But I'm seeing all these errors being thrown. And I'm like, well, there's something wrong here with this SH. So why not just RMSH for a second? So I removed the shell.
Nice. Okay.
It was interesting how we brought that back to life.
Oh, wow.
So that was my big aha moment. Oh, don't give me that access anymore.
I used to work at an insurance brokerage. In IT, and we ran a big AS400 system. This is a 1,000-person company.
Ah, AS400, man, classic.
Millions and millions and millions of dollars of insurance premiums going through this company, and at night everything ran as a batch job through the AS400 to print all the debt, all the premium notices, and all this kind of stuff.
Are we the COBOL? Were you doing COBOL?
No, it's RPG.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Is the native language on AS400. So it was, we had a new guy in IT and he just needed a job. Like he had a history degree. Like he didn't know hardly anything about anything with computers.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired him. And then like a week later, all the MIS people, you know, there used to be a separate department, MIS.
MIS, yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
All the MIS people were like, nobody wanted to stay. The regular night operator guy was off and none of them wanted to stay late. So they're like, hey, we'll just give this guy with a history degree a crash course in AS400 job management.
With RPG.
So they gave him a 15-minute, here's how you do this. You run this command. You wait till this other thing happens. You run this command and then you do these things. But whatever you do, don't do this thing at this time because that'll screw everything up.
He did that thing.
At 2 o'clock in the morning, the thing was so screwed. They had to just start. They just had to punt and start restoring from backup.
Oh, no.
He had started running bash jobs on top of each other and deleting stuff. It was it was like a almost business ending event. And I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? That's
fantastic. Yeah. Dave, there's another podcast in here for us, man.
Yes.
Tales from the Trenches.
Magnolia Mayhem, strap a boost 7777 through Fountain. Magnolia Mayhem says, there is already a good number of audiobooks on RSS podcasting. Yes, there are.
There are. That's for sure.
Mostly creepy pasta stuff like Tales from the Gas Station, several productions of Borrasca, Last Known Position, etc. But it's a foot in the door. I wish I could think of some non-horror examples, but outside of that, I just have custom RSS feeds on my NAS for my own audiobook rips.
There you go.
Which is pretty easy.
Yeah.
Either way, we're already headed in that direction.
Right on.
What is creepy pasta? What does that mean?
It's a good band name.
Yeah, it is.
Good night, everybody. We're creepy pasta.
Let's see. Gene Bean, 2222. Hey, Gene, through Castomatic, he says, I think Dave is right about the KGOD feed being a podcast L feed. But do any apps actually support podcast L playlists?
They will. They will.
They will.
They will. Because that project will happen. Somehow that's going to happen. Someone's going to do it. If it's not me, it's going to be somebody. It's going to happen. Sam Sethi also sent me a very thoughtful email with all kinds of ideas about that. I'm still processing everything. He thinks it should be the publisher feed. I'm thinking the podcast L. I think the list is the way to go. But we're working on it. We're working on it. There's plenty of room. We will figure it out, of course.
Do stuff, see what works, and then go.
Yep.
Comic strip blogger, The Delimiter.
Here we go.
23,000 sats through Fountain. CSB says, howdy, Dave and Adam. I'd like to recommend a podcast about important things in life. Literal quote from the last episode. Quote, I am so happy with my new exercise regime, also called having a job. I don't know if I'll let you know if I can see my junk in the shower someday, unquote, said Ryan Bimrose, the delivery driver for Amazon's subcontractor from Seattle. Other co-host is some unemployed Irish guy called Darren from a Chirac war zone. Daryl. Check it out at www.grumpyoldbens.com, yo, CSB.
So Dvorak, you know, Darren O'Neill always does the rock and roll pre-show. Complete copyright violation before every, it's the copyright violation show before every No Agenda Live show. And John was ragging on him. He says, Daryl. I'm like, wow, man, the guy has been doing this for years and you still don't know his name. You call him Daryl now instead of Darren. Oh, that's where that's come from.
Think we should twist in the knife.
Think we should play a comic strip blogger's jingle. We haven't played that in a while.
Oh yeah, do it. Hit it.
Comic strip blogger. Classic. It's been around for 15 years. That jingle probably.
We got some monthlies.
All right,
Terry. Terry Keller, $5.
Thank you, Terry.
Silicon Florist, $10. Chris Cowan, $5. Damon Kazajak, $15. Yaron Rosenstein, $1. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. Jeremy Gerds, $5. Michael Hall, $5.50. And New Media Productions, that's Todd and Rob, $30.
Oh, thank you all very much. You know, I read somewhere, I think Tallycoin, did they shut down? Did Tallycoin shut down?
We wouldn't know.
We wouldn't know because nothing ever comes in through Tallycoin. So we wouldn't know. That's right.
If a tree falls in the woods and nobody's around to hear it.
Will Tallycoin have a receipt? Nope, it won't. It won't. Hey, good board meeting, everybody. I feel like we fixed it. We solved a lot of stuff once again. That's a board. Who's doing the meeting minutes?
Somebody's got it.
Somebody's got it.
Mike Newman. Mike's got it.
Yeah. All right. Brother, have a great weekend, Dave.
Yeah. Have a good trip to Nashville.
Yes. Enjoy it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Okay. Boardroom. Thank you very much for being here once again. And we'll be back in 2 weeks for another probably extended edition of the Podcasting 2.0 podcast. See you then, everybody.
Podcasts are cool. You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Podcasting is the anti-monopoly.